ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमज्ञानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टतृषामेष पुराणार्को धुमोदितः। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवत कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 6 entitled The Downfall of Sau Bharimuni. Today we'll resume from text number 6, for which there is no purport. So we'll go on to text number 7, which is on the board. I'll just chant number 6 and go together in 7.
स एकदाष्टकाष्टाब्धे इक्ष्वाकुस्तुतमादिशत् मांसम् आनीयतां मेध्यं विकुक्षे गच्छमाचिरम्।
During the months of January, February, and March, oblations offered to the forefathers are called Ashtakashraddha. The Shraddha ceremony is held during the dark fortnight of the month. When Maharaj Ikshvaku was performing his oblations in this ceremony, he ordered his son Vikukshi to go immediately to the forest to bring some pure flesh. That will require some explanation, but we'll go on to the next verse.
Ta-ta-ta! इति स वनं गत्वा मृगान् हत्वा प्रिया अर्हणान् श्रान्तः बुभुक्षितः वीरः शशं च आदत् अपस्मृतिः तथेति सवनं गत्वा मृगान् हत्वा क्रियार्हणान् श्रान्तो बुभुक्षितो वीरः शशं चादत् अपस्मृतिः तथेति सवनं गत्वा मृगान् हत्वा क्रियार्हणान् श्वान्तो बुभुक्षितो वीरः शशं चादत् अपस्मृतिः तथेति सवनं गत्वा मृगान् हत्वा क्रियार्हणान् श्वान्तो बुभुक्षितो वीरः शशं चादत् अपस्मृतिः तथेति सवनं गत्वा मृगान् हत्वा क्रियार्हणान् श्वान्तो बुभुक्षितो वीरः शशंचारदपस्मृतिः
तथेति सवनं गत्वा
मृगान् हत्वा क्रियार्हणान्
श्रान्तो बुभुक्षितो वीरः
शशंचारदपस्मृतिः
तथेति सवनं गत्वा
मृगान् हत्वा क्रियार्हणान्
श्रान्तो बुभुक्षितो वीरः
शशंचारदपस्मृतिः
लेडीस् तथेति सवनं गत्वा
मृगान् हत्वा क्रियार्हणान्
श्रान्तो बुभुक्षितो वीरः
शशंचारदपस्मृतिः
तथा अकॉर्डिंग टू द डायरेक्शन इति दास सः दिक्षि वनं टू द फॉरेस्ट गत्वा गोइंग मृगान् एनिमल्स हत्वा किलिंग क्रिया अर्हणात् suitable for offering to the yajna in the shraddha ceremony. Shrantaha, when he was fatigued, bubhukshitaha, and hungry, viraha, the hero, shasham, a rabbit, cha, also, Adat, he ate. Apasmritihi, forgetting that the flesh was meant for offering in the shrata. Translation. Thereafter, Ikshvaku's son, Vikukshi, went to the forest and killed many animals suitable for being offered as oblations. But when fatigued and hungry, he became forgetful and ate a rabbit he had killed. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. It is evident that Kshatriyas killed animals in the forest because the flesh of the animals was suitable to be offered at a particular type of yajna. Offering oblations to the forefathers in a ceremony known as shraddha is also a kind of yajna. In this yajna, flesh obtained from the forest by hunting could be offered. However, in the present age, Kali Yuga, this kind of offering is forbidden. Quoting from the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Ashvamedham Gavalambham Sanyasam Kalapaitrakam Devarena Sutotpattim Kalau Panchavivarjayet. In this age of Kali, five acts are forbidden. The offering of a horse in sacrifice, the offering of a cow in sacrifice, the acceptance of the order of sannyas, the offering of oblations of flesh to the forefathers, and a man's begetting children in his brother's wife. The word palapaitrakam refers to offering of flesh in oblations to the forefathers. Formerly, such an offering was allowed, but in this age, it is forbidden. In this age, Kali Yuga, Everyone is expert in hunting animals, but most people are Shudras, not Kshatriyas. According to Vedic injunctions, however, only Kshatriyas are allowed to hunt, whereas Shudras are allowed to eat flesh after offering goats and other insignificant animals before the deity of goddess Kali or similar demigods. On the whole, meat eating is not completely forbidden. A particular class of men is allowed to eat meat according to various circumstances and injunctions. As far as eating beef is concerned, however, it is strictly prohibited to everyone. Thus in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna personally speaks of gorakshyam, cow protection. Meat eaters, according to their different positions and directions of the Shastra, are allowed to eat flesh, but never the flesh of cows. Cows must be given all protection. Om Jnanati Varantasya Jnanam Chana Shalakaya Chakshuram Nilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namah Shri Chaitanya Manokishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guroho Shri Yudhapadagamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitantam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopikakanta Radhakanta Namostate Taptakanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanusate Devi Pranamami Haripriye Vanchakalpatrubhyascha Kripasinthubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. In these verses we find there is some facility for meat eating. We can't imagine personally going to the forest and hunting some small creature and then bringing that flesh back to the temple and offering it in sacrifice. But under certain circumstances, these things are allowed. So, Ashtaka Shraddha, Srila Prabhupada points out, this is one particular kind of Shraddha ceremony. What is the Shraddha ceremony? And those who do not know Sanskrit should be take note that this is different than Shraddha. This is Shraddha. It makes a big difference. If you have two classes of vowels in Sanskrit, it makes a big difference sometimes. So, Shraddha ceremony is meant for offering oblations to one's departed forefathers so that they may not have to take another material body or a ghostly body in particular. They can be elevated after their death, even though they may have material desires. Sometimes when people die, especially if people die in untimely death or inauspicious death, suicides, this kind of thing, they may be denied for some time the facility of a material body, gross material body, because they've not taken proper advantage of the one that they already have. Those people are called bhutas. Whereas pretas are those people who leave this world without having performed their varnashrama dharmas, including all these different kinds of samskaras and rituals, of which Shraddha ceremony is one. So, just as with the question of taking sannyas, we know that according to this verse that Prabhupada quotes in his purport, sannyas is forbidden in the modern day and age. And let me see, everyone takes sannyas, including Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, including Srila Prabhupada, including his followers, and throughout his books, Srila Prabhupada gives very unambiguous instructions that one must take sannyas. So how is this? This illustrates another point, an epistemological point, a question of pramana. Pramana means that aspect of philosophy, which is called epistemology. It deals with how we know something to be true, or how we interpret what we hear. So, we have a famous verse from Mahabharata, Tarkoa pratishta shrutayo vibhinna na savrishir yasya matam na bhinna. The arguing alone is not conclusive. Any argument always has its counter-argument. And even if we argue on the basis of revealed scripture, even then it's a little difficult because shrutayo vibhinna. What to speak of the smritis, even the shrutis, are various. They say apparently sometimes contradictory things. What is the difference between the Shruti and the Smriti? Who knows?
Shruti is what is the same. Smriti is what we remember.
Good guess. Shruti means that which is heard. Smriti means that which is remembered. So the actual authority of the Vedas is in the Shruti mantras, and the Shruti consists of the four Veda samhitas, along with their appendixes, which are the Upanishads, Vedic mantras. Anything from the four Vedas, in a word, we can say anything from the four Vedas is Shruti. And anything else is Smriti. So most of the most relevant shastras that we use are actually smritis. And smritis are, they have somewhat less, I don't want to say less authority, but maybe less pedigree, we could say, because they're not originally shrutis. The actual authority is a shruti. But in the case of Srimad Bhagavad Gita, it's called, it is considered Gita Upanishad, because Bhagavad Gita, although a smriti, it largely consists of verses that paraphrase the shruti. Many, many such verses in Bhagavad Gita. And Srimad Bhagavatam also, although it's a smriti literature, it is the natural commentary by the author of Vedanta Sutras, Vyasadeva, on the Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta Sutra is Vyasa's own commentary on the Vedas. So they have very high status. They're not like ordinary shrutis. Sometimes we come across things like Devi Bhagavat Purana, which is dubious authority, or Garga Samhita, which is hardly mentioned by any of our acharyas anywhere. I think Prabhupada never mentioned it anywhere. So, and then when to speak of more recent concoctions, such as Nityananda Charitamrita, which you will find in many devotees' houses, but this book has been rejected by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Because of such books, the smriti is seen with less regard in many circles. So Mahabharata says, arguing alone is not conclusive, because even the shrutis, what to speak of the smritis, appear to have contradictions. We mentioned some of this the other day. In different kalpas, sometimes the shrutis, or the shastras of any sort, they will say slightly different things. They're not necessarily contradictions, but they appear that way. So, and then he goes on to say that a person is not really even considered to be a rishi, Rishi means a thinker. Unless he says something new, unless he's got his own philosophy. It's like when we go to college, they don't give you a PhD unless you've come up with some unique argument that no one has ever said before. So that's described. Yes, nasa vrishir yasya matam nabhinnam. So, how do we understand anything? How do we know what's true and what's not true? Dhanamasya tatvasya nihitam guhaya mahajanu yinagata sapantha. The real truth of dharma, in particular, is within the heart of the unadulterated pure devotee, the Mahajan. Therefore, the real path of progress is to follow whatever injunctions the Mahajanas give, or follow whatever interpretations they give. So in this case, we're talking about sannyas in the age of Kali. It's not allowed, and yet we do it anyway. It's because the acharyas agree, this is a good thing. Generally, Krishna says, twice in Bhagavad Gita, generally it's a good idea to never give up sacrifice, austerity, and charity. So sannyasa is a kind of sacrifice, it's certainly an austerity, and therefore it's advised even in Kali Yuga. Now, shraddha. This is another touchy one, because in some places we find instructions that one should perform shraddha, and sometimes we find injunctions that say that for Vaishnavas, shraddha is not necessary. So what do we do about this? How should we understand this? Who has some ideas? Your parents are going to die, or maybe they've already died. You have to do something about it. You have to make a decision. What are you going to do? That's a clever answer. Become a pure devotee. Generally, these kinds of instructions are given for those who are completely pure devotees. As we know from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says in chapter 3. What is the topic of chapter 3 in Bhagavad Gita? Karma Yoga. And another name for karma is dharma, because although karma means action, generally, but it specifically means ritual action that is enjoined in the Vedas, and that kind of action is called dharma. It's also called punya. And to do anything else is called vikarma, or papa, or adharma. So Krishna says in chapter 3, text number 17, he's talking about all the things that a person should do. For example, he says, regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality, God, and etc. One who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice established by the Vedas certainly leads a life full of sin, living only for the satisfaction of the senses. Such a person lives in vain. And then he goes on to say, yes, atmaratereva syat atmatriptascha manava atmanyeva cha santushtas tasya karyam nivedyate. But for one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. Now, Srila Prabhupada in his purport comments here. A person who is fully Krishna conscious, and Srila Prabhupada put the italics in this word fully, so he's intending to emphasize, and is fully satisfied by his acts in Krishna consciousness, no longer has any duty to perform. Due to his being Krishna conscious, all impiety is instantly cleansed, and effect of many, many thousands of yajna performances. By clearing, such clearing of consciousness, one becomes fully confident of his eternal position in relationship with the Supreme. His duty thus becomes self-illuminated by the grace of the Lord, and therefore he no longer has any obligations to the Vedic injunctions. And then he just is a final note here, because it's Kali Yuga after all, he adds, Such a Krishna conscious person is no longer interested in material activities and no longer takes pleasure in material arrangements like wine, women, and similar infatuations. He doesn't just mention material activities, he mentions sinful activities. Just as in chapter 16, Krishna talks about what? What is the topic of chapter 16 in Bhagavad Gita? Divine and demoniac natures. 4 or 5 verses he talks about the divine nature. The rest of the chapter he devotes to the demoniac nature. Because after all, it's Kali Yuga. So, in the same way, Srila Prabhupada is saying this. But the point here is that when one actually awakens firm faith and real taste for hearing about Vasudeva and remaining absorbed in Vasudeva, then that person no longer has to perform all the ordinary injunctions that are meant for human life. We mentioned this last night. It's a point worth mentioning again and again, that humanity is not biologically defined. Humanity is actually defined by adherence to the codes of dharma. So that's an important point. And back to chapter 3, you might as well add, Srila Prabhupada has a very nice purport here, because after all, it's Kali Yuga and nobody can even follow dharma, so why even bother? This is often what we conclude. Krishna tells Arjuna, Ye me matamedam nityam anatishtanti manavaha shuddhavanto nasuyanto muchante te pikarmahihi. Those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions and who follow this teaching faithfully without envy become free from the bondage of fruitive actions. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, the injunction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is the essence of all Vedic wisdom and therefore is eternally true without exception. As the Vedas are eternal, so is this truth of Krishna consciousness. One should have firm faith in this injunction without envying the Lord. There are many envious commentators on Bhagavad Gita, he goes on to explain, but they'll never be liberated. However, an ordinary man with firm faith in the eternal injunctions of the Lord, even though unable to execute such orders, becomes liberated. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one may not fully discharge the injunctions of the Lord, but because one is not resentful of this principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness, he will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. So, Krishna concludes, those who out of envy disregard these teachings and do not follow them regularly are to be considered bereft of all knowledge, befooled, and ruined in their endeavors for perfection. Why is that? Well, something he says in chapter 7 is relevant here, in text number 28. Anybody know it? Yesham tvantagatam papa jananam punya karmanam te dvandvamoha nirmukta bhajante mam drahavrataha. That means that those who have acted piously in this life and in previous lives and whose sinful reactions are completely eradicated are freed from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. This is why we follow the injunctions of the Shastra without any question of utilitarian profit or loss. Because it purifies the heart. And I've mentioned already once, Krishna says 2 times in Bhagavad Gita that sacrifice, charity, and austerity should never be given up. When Arjuna asks him about the difference between tyaga and sannyas in chapter 18, the first 5 or so verses of that chapter, Krishna explains this. And the acharyas commenting on that passage also explain that one cannot give up actions that are enjoined in the Shastra. Instead, one has to give up the fruits of those actions. So this is the reason, if there is a reason, other than it's what Krishna wants. We want to cultivate a mature commitment to pure devotional service, and that's not easy when we're sinful. If we're still marred by the after effects of sinful activity, what are the after effects of sinful activity? They're subtle. They're in the mind. They're in your psychology. They're in your heart. It's like trying to light wood that is wet. When wood is damp, you can't light it on fire. Only dry wood will ignite. So, therefore, Krishna says that this kind of state of mind in which our minds are still what Bhagavatam Rishabhadev calls in the fifth canto, karmatmaka, or even worse, vikarmatmaka, colored by fruit of activity, or colored by sinful activity, stained, if you will. This makes it very difficult, actually, to adopt pure devotional service or to persevere in pure devotional service. So he says, this is called dvandva moha, the bewilderment of duality, bewilderment. Bookmark this word, bewilderment. We'll return to it in a moment. So, te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajante mam drudhavrata. They can worship me with firm determination who are free from those effects of previous sinful activities. And that only happens when we are engaged in pious activity. You cannot keep adding sinful activity to your portfolio and think that the wood is going to dry enough that you can ignite the fire. This is the point. Therefore, these Vedic injunctions are important. And for the most part, we will follow them, of course. We're not going to offer flesh to the deities in the temple. This is something Srila Prabhupada talks about tomorrow in text number 8. But the principle is there. Now, how is it that we're offering flesh to begin with? Mamsam, medhyam. The word medhyam means a pure offering, which is only meant for oblations. It's very different than factory farming or slaughterhouses that, you know, where the whole purpose is only sense gratification from beginning to end. We're not utilitarians. Utilitarian means we consider what the fruit of the action will be. If it works, then we do it. If it doesn't work, we don't do it. This is wrong. According to the Vedic authority, one should only execute one's prescribed duty because it is one's prescribed duty, and without considering happiness or defeat, loss or gain, profit, etc., all these kinds of things. So medhyam means something that is suitable, pure, for offering and sacrifice. And this is the only interest that the Kshatriya kings had in killing animals. And Prabhupada has also mentioned here that it's only the Kshatriyas who did this. Why? Because it was not anyone else's duty, therefore no one else would touch. We should only do our own prescribed duty. In the 7th canto, chapter 15, when Narada Muni is instructing on the principles of dharma, he mentions 5 kinds of irreligion, 5 kinds, one of which is paradharma. To do someone else's dharma is a kind of adharma. This is the principle in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna is emphasizing to Arjuna. Arjuna has to do his duty, not someone else's duty. This is another one of the verses of Bhagavad Gita that Krishna mentions twice. He mentions it earlier on and then again in chapter 18. So the king, Ikshvaku, he ordered his son Vikukshi, go without delay and bring some oblations. It's not like, go have some fun blowing away rabbits and eating whatever you want. The dharma is the primary concern, this is the point. Then what happened? Tathethi savanam gatva, having gone to that forest, mrigan hatva kriyahan, and having killed so many animals that were suitable for offering in the Shakti ceremony, shanto bhukshito viraha. He became, although he was vira, what does vira mean? Powerful. lots of vitality, heroic, courageous, a hero. Although he was a great strong man, but Shanta, he became exhausted. And Bubhukshita, he became racked with hunger. And therefore, Shasham cha adat apasmriti, he became bewildered. This is why I told you to bookmark that term. Apasmriti. Apasmriti means a few things, according to the dictionary. It means bewilderment is one thing. It means chiefly forgetful. It also means confused or absent. Spaced out is the modern equivalent. So, apasmriti. This is what he did. And this kind of problem is characteristic of conditioned souls. Every one of us has a breaking point. Every CIA agent knows this. You can crack anybody. It's just a question of how. But everybody has a weak spot. Even if he's a Vita, even if he's a hero. So although he was such a great, strong Kshatriya, valorous, very full of power, vigor, but he became overwhelmed. There are six whips described in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 10th canto and elsewhere, 11th canto as well. They are hunger, thirst, decay. What is decay? It's like old age. When age creeps up on you, you feel it. When we're young, we have no idea what this means. But when age creeps up on you, you start to feel it. You can't think straight anymore, you can't remember things anymore, you can't learn things anymore, you can't move the way you used to move anymore, you don't have enough strength anymore, you can't... Adi, 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 adi. Adi means etc. in Sanskrit. So, decay is another major problem when we're conditioned souls. Also grief. We become traumatized by so many things. Grief stricken. And illusion, that can be the same bewilderment, apasmriti. And finally death. We have to die. So these are things that plague all of us. So we should be very careful and not be so judgmental when we find that someone becomes bewildered. Even Krishna says, and the acharyas explain even more emphatically than Krishna himself in their commentaries, when a person is a saintly person, meaning that his primary aim is to become a saint, then even if that person does an extremely abominable thing, sudurachara means extremely abominable, still he has to be considered sadhu eva samantanya. He has to be considered only a sadhu. Sadhu eva. Eva means only. And of course he'll quickly become dharmana again. This is why Srila Prabhupada wrote in chapter 317, the verse we just read, one should not become discouraged by hopelessness or any calculation of profit and loss. We're trying to become Krishna conscious in the age of Kali. And if this can happen to even the son of Ikshvaku, then what about us? It's not surprising if we slip up once in a while. But anyway, this is what he did. And Shasham Chada, as Prabhupada's purport points out, he didn't eat any cows or other animals. He ate a rabbit, insignificant rabbit. So, Sridhar Swami and also Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and others, they point out that beginning here with text number 6, the next 4 verses describe how it is that this Vaidyakukshi became bewildered and how he eventually came to be called Shashada. What does Shashada mean? You may not have remembered, but in the chapter summary it's described that Vikukshi later became known as Shashada. He was driven out of the kingdom, as a matter of fact, because of his non-compliance with the ritual injunctions. Just see how seriously it was taken. And he took a new name called Shashada. What does Shashada mean? Shasha means rabbit, Ada means to eat. We've heard this name before, or this word Ada before. When Kunti Devi lists all the difficulties that she had to undergo with her children back in the first canto, she said among them were the Purushadas. Purushadas, that's even worse than a Shashada. Even worse than a rabbit eater is a person who eats human beings. And this is Rakshasas. So it's not quite there yet, at least we don't know. There's no proof yet, but at some point in the near future, people will start doing that also. In fact, in Chinese history, if you know anything about Eastern civilizations, the Chinese, they generally have a tendency for cannibalism from time to time. It's been seen in their history. Therefore, one famous poet who was adopted by the revolutionaries led by Chairman Mao, he wrote a book about this, Lu Xun. His name was Lu Xun. He said that everywhere he went in life, he found that everybody was looking at him as if analyzing, the way a cannibal might consider. So it actually is like that to some degree. Jivo, jiva, siti, nana. Everybody is calculating how to exploit everyone else in this world. And in sinful ways, it doesn't matter whether it's sinful or pious, people have no compunction. They'll do anything. Now, Srila Prabhupada writes that everyone is expert in hunting animals. Raise your hand if you ever hunted animals. You don't have to raise your hand if you don't want to, but generally we don't hunt animals. Generally we go to, I don't know where your supermarkets are here. Do you have Kroger's here? Such a thing. You go and buy something shrink-wrapped and you don't have to think about where it came from and it looks clean because it's shiny and they keep it neatly stacked. But this is the product of some horrible, horrible violence. Some people are awake to this. But in general, we're not reminded of it because the person selling these things don't want us to think about where it came from as well. So, but according to Vedic injunctions, Prabhupada says only Kshatriyas can do this. Shudras are allowed to eat flesh offered to demigods. What kind of demigods? Kalima, what the Bhagavatam calls Ghorarupam, horrible, ghastly forms of minor sub-demigods. In Tamil Nadu, I often travel in South India. Outside the village, you have these Gramya Devatas, village deities, and people come and offer them cheap country wine and such things that we would never think of even touching. So this kind of deities. Certainly not Vishnu. You cannot imagine Sitaram, someone offering them such things. It's impossible. Lakshmi Narayan, out of the question, completely. So, needless to say, Vaishnavas are completely forbidden to accept these kinds of things. You can't even offer them, what to speak of, accept them. But a particular class is allowed under various circumstances and injunctions. And those injunctions and circumstances are being described here. Ashtaka Shraddha ceremony, for example. Therefore, these things, they actually have some importance because there will always be some people in human society who are not willing to follow the regular principles. So if you don't want to follow the regular principles, then how do you enjoy? Not just by default, because the default is sinful activity in modern society. Anywhere in the world, even in India, where I live, the default has become, especially in urban centers, sinful activity. That is the default status. But actually the real system is that if you have desires to enjoy, especially if you have desires to enjoy things that are generally considered sinful, the way to do that is to do so through the injunctions of the Shastras. Otherwise you go down. When you follow the injunctions of the Shastras, you cannot go down. You will go up. You will come back again if your activities are material, that's sure. But at least you will be elevated. Because to some degree, you're observing this principle that Krishna has mentioned twice of sacrifice, austerity, and charity under the authority of the Vedas. Tasmat chastram pramanam te Karya Karya Vijanataha, he says at the end of chapter 16. We should understand what to do and what not to do on the basis of Shastra injunctions. So Srila Prabhupada ends his purport speaking of Gorakshyam, because Krishna does also. Cows have to be given all protection. Five classes have to be protected. Who are they? Cows, brahmanas, women, huh? Children, and old people. Now, we notice these are the most abused people in society, isn't it? Cows are killed. They're not even allowed to live. Women and children, everybody knows that, even though they don't really do anything serious to prevent it. Brahmanas, they don't know. Generally, we're envious of Brahmins also. They're called nerds. You see? So old people, women, children. Old people are also abused. People come and steal all their life savings. Worse, well documented these things. This is Kali Yuga. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada said that the remaining 50% of his mission is to reform society. Reform society means that we actually follow what the Shastra says to follow with regards to our material affairs. That, of course, requires that we admit that we do have material affairs. Because many of us don't do that. But that's maybe another topic. I think we're running out of time now, so I'm going to stop here. But these are a few things we can think about. But if anybody has any questions or comments, you can answer yes. What is your name? Giri Dhani. You're talking about Neha Bhikramana Shusti? Pratyavani Vidite Solpam Apiyase Trinas. Excuse me, Trayate Mahatopayam?
No, it's like, what is the loss for someone who gives up their prescribed duty and then they falls down?
Okay. Well, Arjun's not really asking that, but there are such verses in Bhagavatam, not in Bhagavad Gita. There the principle is that when Krishna wants, then you have to give up, you know, whatever it is, dharma or adharma, whatever, really dharma means to do what Krishna wants. This is the ultimate principle. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam, whatever Bhagavan orders, that is actually dharma, regardless of what the Shastra says. But the problem is that we have so many people in human society who are tamasic enough that they consider that their dharma is to fly a jetliner into the World Trade Center, for example. You see? So we have to actually be sure that what we're thinking God wants is should be definite. Is that answering your question? You want to continue? He says that many times.
So in one sense, you have to, if you really submit to the fact that you have to change your dharma, your swadharma, or you have to give up your duty in one sense. Kind of, from my perspective, I guess I kind of gave up some duties in one sense without really knowing what I was doing.
Well, we never do anything without knowing what we're doing. And And we have to determine what is our duty, first of all, on the basis of the Shastra, as Krishna has said. And how to do that is not so easy also. That's why we have gurus. So the guru will tell us what is our duty, and the Shastra will tell us what is our duty. Not that we just assume that because I'm born in one particular family, everybody does this, I have to continue this. Or that because I think I have a particular nature, I have to concoct something that's what I think is in accordance with that nature. These kinds of things go on also. But really these things are, as he says in chapter 16, they're determined by Shastra. And Shastra is, of course, interpreted by Guru. That's the whole point of that verse we quoted. Mahajano yena gata satanta. You see? So with respect to dharma vis-a-vis Krishna consciousness, I'm sensing that this is embedded in the question. That the order of the spiritual master is absolutely the most essential and central thing to Krishna consciousness. So if the spiritual master orders us to perform, say, for example, Varnashram Dharma, then we certainly cannot give up that order, because that becomes an offense against the holy name. I've seen, in many cases, sometimes people blaspheme the corollary of the literature, such as the Dharma Shastras, Manusmriti, etc., because they think it's not relevant. So that's also an offense against the holy name. And these things are the most deleterious. They will destroy bhakti. If Srila Prabhupada told us to do something, then it should be understood that this is what we have to do, and this is how we will advance in Krishna consciousness. In other words, look at it this way. If at Kurukshetra, Krishna can instruct Arjuna to engage in adharma in order to please him, then certainly in Chicago in 2017, we can engage in dharma to please Srila Prabhupada, his representative. This is the point. And to give up the Shastra conjunction means we have to replace it with something. What will that be? I've seen many proposals, but they all have the air of concoction about them. This is the problem. There can be nothing objective, no objective basis for loka sangraha, which means, in a word, social solidarity. This is what Krishna mentions in Bhagavad Gita. Loka sangraha nevapi, even if only for the purpose of maintaining peace in society, a person should do his dharma, but actually there's an individual purpose to be fulfilled as well. So dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. It has to come from Bhagavan or from his representative, and in our case it has. Is that clear? Yes.
So on the same theme, I appreciate very much the point that you very strongly presented on the importance, well, Prabhupada's instruction of establishing the national dharma, and also how that is also important for us as representatives of Prabhupada to follow, to establish, and to be able to be part of that. Now, specifically on the point that I said, for example, as mentioned here, the Shraddha ceremony, what we have received, at least, I speak for myself as a disciple of disciples of Prabhupada, and, you know, living in adopting the culture that we've been given, ISKCON culture, the Shraddha ceremony that we were not giving importance to all these different rituals that are there, say the Garbhagha Samskara, we chant as for Prabhupada's instructions, 50 rounds, and then like that. Or the Shraddha ceremony, we, in general, what we do is we sponsor a Sunday feast in memory of our ancestors, you know, like that. So this is not necessarily the injunctions of the, you know, dharma injunctions that are there for this purpose. Is it that we have to evolve towards that? Is it all right to continue doing that? Is what we given to us? So how do we deal with this seemingly
Guru Sadhu Shastra Bhakko Chite Te Kori Aite. No? This is Narottam Das Thakur says, we should do whatever the Guru Sadhu Shastra says. So we have to analyze whether what we're doing is actually in accordance with Guru Sadhu Shastra Bhakti. This is the point. There is a Shraddha ceremony that we can perform. It's written in the Shastra, it's quite clear what has to be done. Even if the effective ingredient, so to speak, is Harinam Sankirtan, which should always be there, you know, still we follow. Look at it this way. Srila Prabhupada told us to follow Varnashram Dharma. In fact, he said it was remaining 50% of his mission. But that doesn't mean that we depend on that, because as a matter of fact, we cannot follow. We cannot follow. We always fail. So this is the point of chapter 3, text 31 in purport, which I read, that even if there's so much failure in that endeavor, the point is that we are following the instructions. We're surrendering to the spiritual master's order. That is the point. And whether we are successful, whether we're not successful, that's up to Krishna. But we have to make the attempt. So there's a few things here in this question. There's at least three or four questions involved. One is, is what we're doing in ISKCON even consistent everywhere in ISKCON? I don't think so. And that kind of highlights the next problem, which is, what we're doing actually based on Guru Sadhu Shastra, in a very clear manner? That's also in some question. The third thing is even more important, which is, you know, how do we interpret Guru Sadhu Shastra? This is a very important thing. I wrote an essay about this, based on a verse of the 11th canto. Shruti pratyaksham aitihyam anumanam chitushtayam. Krishna tells Arjuna in 11th canto, or I'm sorry, he tells Uddhava in 11th canto, that you should understand how to deal with this world by four pramanas. One of them is shabda pramana, he calls shruti. The other one is anumana, and the other one is pratyaksha, and the fourth one is aitihyam. Aitihyam is not a word that we hear very much outside of this verse, but it is quoted often by our acharyas in their commentaries. It means basically traditional precedent of our guru parampara, or the society in general, which is explicitly advocated as dharma, elevating. That is a very powerful epistemological tool to help us understand how the spiritual master's instructions, or how Guru Sadhu Shastra Vakyas, have been traditionally understood. That is a very great frame of reference, because Kali Yuga always gets worse. Therefore, to look to the past in perfected Vaishnava charges is actually a good idea. Is that okay? There's like I said, there's quite a few questions embedded in this one, so it's a big topic, but I hope that's helpful. What is your name again?
Subhadas.
Shubha. Subhadas. Oh, Subhadas. Thank you. Okay, anything else? Then we can stop here. Thank you very much. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.